Hey, podcast listeners, before we get started, if the IRS is freaking you out right now and you want to do something about it, you can call me at 833-243-5455 and set up a free 30-minute consultation or log on to watkinspodcast.com. I've got a short letter on that No Frills page. It'll take you about 90 seconds to read. And if you like what I'm saying, you might want to consider becoming a client. And if not, hey, no big deal. Keep listening and subscribe to this podcast so you can keep hearing the free content on how you can fix your tax problem today. So if you owe the IRS, you may have noticed that they have been pretty active lately filing a bunch of liens. And this is the IRS's way of letting the world know that you have a tax problem. These liens are also pretty nasty if you're trying to sell your home or refi to a lower interest rate. It's a pretty extreme measure at the IRS, and it means they want all the money that you owe them, and they want it right now. But there are a few things you can do to get these things lifted short of paying everything that you owe right now. For example, if you owe less than $25,000, a tax professional may be able to get these lifted in about 90 days. If you owe more than $25,000, there are things like the IRS's offering compromise settlement program that gets them off once they accept that. Now, we've helped thousands of taxpayers in an IRS mess, so we can probably help you out here too. We can help you out in all 50 states. So if you have a tax problem, I again encourage you to call me at 833-243-5455 or log on to watkinspodcast.com and set up a time there to talk to one of our tax experts about getting some help today. Now, back to your podcast.
IRS problems are scary, but they don't have to be. Travis Watkins has been helping troubled taxpayers with customized plans to negotiate with the IRS and stop immediate threats to their livelihood
so they can get a good night's sleep again.
Since 1999. Now, here's Travis.
Everybody always wants to know, and it's on the top of everyone's mind, if you owe taxes of any IRS nature. Can I settle these taxes for less than what the IRS is saying that I owe? And the answer to that is you may be able to. The way that you do that is through the IRS's offer and compromise program. It's the kind of the crown jewel of what we do at my office, and you should know kind of how the thing works as well, so you can make a decision of whether or not you want to go for that or not. In my opinion, my professional opinion, I think it's always worthwhile to start with the offer and compromise process and kind of work backwards from there. The reason for that is that as long as you're putting out a good faith offer and compromise request there, the IRS will, in most circumstances, even if they say no on this thing, they're going to come up with some other type of collection alternative, meaning something short of levying your bank accounts, levying, I didn't say loving, kind of sound like loving. They're not gonna give much love to your bank accounts. Something short of them levying your bank accounts is what I'm referring to as a collection alternative. So why not start with the offer and compromise, and then, you know, if they say no ultimately, then you can start looking at things that we've already talked about, like payment plans or installment agreements with the IRS and penalty abatements or forgiveness, as we'll talk about later after the offer and compromise. But these other types of things may still be available even if you can't do an offer and compromise. So why not take a shot at it, especially if you don't have significant assets, you don't have significant significant income that you could just flat go ahead and pay off your IRS debt with. All right. So, translation, I guess, is you should always try an offer and compromise. And I'm going to deliver here what I think everybody always wants, and that is how to settle for less than the IRS is saying that you owe. All right. So let me start with kind of a broad overview of the offer and compromise process, and kind of start way back at the beginning here with the big elephant in the room, I think, which is this thing that the IRS and the federal government calls the tax gap. The tax gap. And let me kind of show you. I'll just go straight to the IRS's website and kind of walk you through what they have to say about the tax gap. The IRS .gov statistics page has something called IRS the tax gap on it, and it defines the tax gap as the gross tax gap is the difference between true tax liability for a given tax year and the amount that is paid on time. It is comprised of the non-filing gap, the under-reporting gap, and the underpayment or remittance gap. The next tax gap is the portion of the gross tax gap that will never be recovered through enforcement or other late payments. And really, that's kind of the important tax gap that we're focusing on here right now. I think in layman's talk, what they're saying here is the tax gap is the difference between what people either file on their tax return or should file on their tax return as taxes due and owing versus what actually gets collected, either voluntarily or through these enforcement things, as they call it, or other late payments. They say the reports listed below vary as to whether they focus narrowly on one or two types of tax versus all taxes. They're organized into sections dealing with tax years 2008 through 10, tax year 06, tax year 01, and earlier. So translation, we're only getting here just kind of a word of caution right from the get-go here, straight from the IRS website. The most recent stats they keep on this is 2010 tax year, okay? So not real up to the minute, and that's probably because of how big this number that I'm getting ready to show you is. I have to imagine that it's bigger than this at this point, but nonetheless, we'll go with the most recent tax year that they keep stuff on. That is Federal Tax Compliance Research for tax estimates for years 2008 through 2010. We'll go to that and skip through all the fun government stuff here, and I want to show you something, one thing real important here. Here it is. The overall gross and net tax gap, as shown in Table 1, which is this extremely complicated looking government chart, the estimated gross tax gap is, drum roll please, $458 billion. With a B. That's the difference again between what should be showing up on tax returns out there versus what they've actually collected on those tax returns. $458 billion. They go on to say an estimated $52 billion of the gross tax gap eventually will be collected, resulting in a net tax gap of $406 billion. Okay, not as bad as 458, but still pretty daggum significant, if you ask me. $458 billion or $407 billion is that big tax gap that the IRS exists to try to collect, all right? So let me tell you a big secret, and here's what I think it is from this data. I don't think they're ever going to collect $452 billion or even $407 billion. Okay? That's it. Just way too much money to even get your mind around there. Before we went on here, I went and just Googled how many employees are at the IRS. And that number was 73,000 IRS employees currently, working at the IRS. And granted, not all those folks are collection people that are directly on the front lines of collecting IRS taxes. There's auditors, there's people that are just processing returns. Different departments there, of course. So that $73,000 are not all directly responsible for directly closing the tax gap. But let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they all were. That comes out to, I've done the math in advance so I don't have to bore you and put extreme pressure on myself while we're live here. It comes out to roughly $6.2 billion per IRS employee that they've got to collect. So again, I don't think they're gonna make it. Even if they increase their workforce, they're not ever gonna even really scratch the surface of getting this all collected, okay? So what does this mean? I think it means that, and I know that it means, that they are going to do what any rational person would in their position, and that is to try to get as much money as possible to try to close that tax gap. And what that often means, especially with folks that aren't necessarily financially viable at any given period of time, they're going to settle some of these taxes, and they're going to settle them sometimes for pretty big numbers on a very micro basis from taxpayer to taxpayer. And that could be good news for you if you owe the IRS and you cannot pay it all back like right now, okay? So that brings us to the Offer and Compromise program at the IRS.
Hey, podcast, quick interruption here. Have you been up at 2 a.m. worrying about your IRS problem again lately? You know, IRS problems have a way of ruining all aspects of your life. They take a toll on you financially, physically, and emotionally. You can never really forget about them as they come back every morning when you wake up. It's time to call Travis Watkins, tax resolution and accounting firm, right now and start sleeping again tonight. Travis Watkins Tax will talk to the IRS for you and help you get the best deal available for your unique situation with the IRS, with programs like the Fresh Start Initiative and the IRS's Offer and Compromise. Call me at 833-243-5455 and set up a free 30-minute consultation or log on to WatkinsPodcast.com. I've got a short letter on that no-frills page. It'll take you about 90 seconds to read. And if you like what I'm saying, you might want to consider becoming a client. And if not, no big deal. Just keep listening and subscribe to this podcast so you can keep hearing the free content that we offer on how you can fix your tax problem today. Now, if you call us in the next 30 minutes, we'll also send you our free confidential insider report, How to End IRS Problems Forever. That number again is 833-243-5455 or log on to WatkinsPodcast.com. Now, back to your podcast.
And really, this is the big 5,000-foot view of what that looks like there in IRS collection terms. There are three types of offers and compromise, and the first one is called the doubt as to collectability offer and compromise, and that's the most traditional one that you've probably heard about, where the IRS will cut you a deal of some type. It's the most popular type of offer and compromise. And we'll spend a lot more time here talking about the doubt as to collectability offer and compromise. The next type of offer and compromise is the doubt as to liability offer and compromise. The first one was doubt as to collectability. This one is doubt as to liability. And it's just like it sounds. You're telling the IRS, hey, I don't think you guys are correct. you are charging me either with somebody else's taxes, or I don't owe nearly as much as you say that I owe. This comes up sometimes in audits that don't go in the taxpayer's favor. And it's one of the types of relief that you could bring when you don't agree with an audit. The first line of defense on those, of course, is fighting the audit outright. Or if you don't agree there and you have enough time to do so, you can appeal the IRS's determination, or you could take it to tax court. Or you could file a doubt as to liability offer and compromise. These are a fairly rare type of audit or of offer and compromise, so we won't spend a whole lot of time with this one here, especially in the overview. The third type of offer and compromise, and this one is really rare, it is the ETA or kind of a fairness type of offer and compromise. It is effective tax administration is what I was struggling for, the ETA, and it's really for exceptional circumstances. It comes up sometimes when a taxpayer often comes up with elderly taxpayers who are on a fixed or very diminished income, and they have, let's say, significant equity in their home, but that's their primary residence, and it would be unfair to kick them out of their home or make them sell it in their condition just to pay off taxes. So in rare circumstances, you can challenge the IRS's tax assessments against you because they would otherwise be unfair. And it'd be an effective tax administration type procedural thing for the IRS to go ahead and forgive them. Of course, remember there's other cumulative remedies there in those types of circumstances. We've talked about the currently not collectible status with the IRS. That's another type. But when you're talking about offers and compromise, in other words, getting some type of a settlement that would actually finish up the tax liability short of paying it in full, these are the three types that we're talking about. All right. So now let's focus in a little bit more on the recipes for the doubt as to collectability offer and compromise. That's the very the most popular one. It's the one that everybody wants when they come into a tax professional, a tax resolution firm in particular. The first question, can I settle some of the IRS debt? So here's the recipe for the doubt as to collectability offer and compromise. First of all, if your reasonable collection potential, and that's a term of art that the IRS uses in the offer and compromise process, if the reasonable collection potential, or RCP, is less than the tax penalties and interest over the course of the collection statute expiration date, the statute of limitations of the IRS, then they will cut a deal for that taxpayer. However, they will not cut a deal for a taxpayer if they are even $1, their RCP, their reasonable collection potential, is over the amount that they could collect over the course of time that they have to collect it. Remember, we've talked about the collection statute expiration date already. That's the 10-year statute of limitations that the IRS can come against you for those 10 years. And there's a myriad of different types of exceptions and things that stop and start or restart that collection statute expiration date, or CSED. But that's the big overall overarching principle with this type of offer and compromise is, does that RCP exceed the or is it less than the amount that the IRS could come after you for over the course of its 10-year statute of limitations? All right. And that's really it in a nutshell from a very broad standpoint. So here's what the RCP, that reasonable collection potential, really means. It's how much the IRS, again, can collect over its statute of limitations. We've talked previously about the Form 433A, and 433, Form Collection Information Statement, is going to be due when you ask for an offer of compromise with the IRS, and we've already been over that one. If you didn't catch that one, please go back and check it out. But essentially, what that form is looking for is current information on what your income, your gross income, and your expenses that the IRS will accept. That difference is the net disposable income, and that is what they will take that number. They'll take that out times the number of months that remain on the collection statute. And how do you find out what the collection statute date is, the last date that the IRS can come after you? It's the IMFOLT transcript. Another thing that we've talked about previously on how to get one of those forms. They're not super easy to get that form. And if you have any problems getting that, you'll definitely want to talk to a tax professional. You can talk to us at 800-721-7054. But quite simply, the amount of your net disposable income times the number of months remaining in the collection statute plus any equity and assets. Oftentimes, people's homes are the biggest asset that they might have. That is the number that all equals the IRS's reasonable collection potential. Okay, so again, if you're on one side of this, if your reasonable collection potential is less, you're going to get an offer in compromise. Excuse me, most likely. And what does that offer in compromise look like in the context of the doubt as to collectability? Once you have met this first threshold that you're not going to essentially be collectible, including penalties and interest on the tax over the collection statute, then they will default down to this 12 months of net disposable income from your Form 433. Okay? So just for ease of talking about these things, let's say that after taking your gross income minus your expenses, let's just call it a round number of $1,000, for instance, you would, once you've met the reasonable collection potential threshold, you take that $1,000 that's left over at the end of any given month, take that times 12, and you would have a $12,000 offer in compromise. And that scenario that I just played out obviously didn't have any assets in it, but if it did have, let's say, net equity in a home, let's say it was $5,000, that would be taken into account here too. So it would be $12,000 plus the $5,000 of equity for a total offer in compromise, doubt as to collectability of $17,000, all right? Okay, these are difficult concepts. They are things, though, that you can kind of figure out how things work. And if you need a tax professional, you want a tax professional to put these things together for you, then you'll want to call a tax professional. Call us. So that's the overview on the offer and compromise. We'll be talking in later sessions here about how to kind of get down into the details of these offers and compromise. The devil is always in the details, you know, but big picture, that is essentially the offer and compromise process. All right. Again, I hope you're enjoying these videos. If you are, keep watching, because we're just going to keep drilling down further and further to figure out some end to your IRS nightmare. All right. I hope you have a great day.